The Red Nation interview series is brought to you by Derby Star Canada. Visit derbystar.ca and see specialty soccer balls designed with development in mind for all ages. Play soccer with quality like the German and Dutch at derbystar.ca.
You're listening to Red Nation Online.
Welcome to the Red Nation Podcast Interview Series. My name is Steve Botcher, and recently I had the chance to speak with Toronto FC Director of Sports Science, Jim Liston. In this interview, Jim and I discuss the new sports science department he is leading within Toronto FC, his approach to sports science innovation, injury prevention, and helping athletes reach their highest potential, and his upcoming participation as a featured clinician at the 2015 National Soccer Coaching Conference. And now, Jim Liston. Jim, it's been a few months since you were announced as part of Greg Vanney's coaching staff at Toronto FC. One of the things that stood out as exciting for me when the announcement was made was around the fact that you were named Director of Sports Science rather than as a strength and conditioning coach. How does your role differ from a more traditional strength and conditioning coach?
Well, let me first say, Steve, I was excited too because that was an exciting thing for Greg to offer to me, that's for sure. So you and I were both excited. The difference is pretty simple. A full-time strength and conditioning coach typically deals with the first team, and my role with Toronto FC will not only be with the first team, our USL team, but I'll also be involved in the athletic development of the academy teams, which we have six of right now. So my scope of practice, so to speak, will be greater. Secondly, I will be not just handling the performance side of training, I'll also be putting together or linking together the medical side of it as well to make sure that the communication between the medical staff, the strength and conditioning staff, and the coaching staff is as flawless and seamless as can be as we prepare for the season or we prepare for a week or for one practice, that we are optimizing the practice time for the team and for each player. So that is that's really thrilling for me.
It seems like in recent years, things in professional sports have really ramped up with respect to professional teams in all sports, putting more of an emphasis on a more analytical and scientific approach with respect to managing their teams. Greg commented at his end-of-season press conference that he did not think that TFC as a team were fit enough and that they suffered too many injuries. With the launch of your new department and a new focus on sports science innovation and helping players reach their highest potential, what are the main things you hope to achieve in your first full season with Toronto FC's first team?
This coming season, I would really look to take what we analyzed, and I agree that sports have gone that way, and it's important to decide what you're going to measure and how the measurements affect your decision-making as a coach as we prepare for a practice or a game. I think we've got our hands wrapped around what we deem most important, so my goal is going into the season, we have our schedule now, is to first lay out what the training volume and intensity will be for the entire year, fully anticipating that we will be making the playoffs in the fall. As we progress in preseason, that becomes more of a weekly preparation because, as you know, there are adjustments throughout the season, whether it's players getting called up, national team, injuries, etc. That's maybe the long answer. The short answer is I want us to be healthy, fit, and athletic. My role is to make sure the coaching staff has as many players at their disposal for a game than they ever have before. We want to keep them healthy. We want to be the fittest team in the league, relentless, scoring loads of goals in the last 15 minutes and not giving up too many, which is always a good reflection of that. And the third would be athletic. And I break athleticism down to not only being fit, but being agile, mobile, powerful, and fast. So that would be it. Healthy, fit, and athletic wraps it up. We do that, we drop the injury rate down, We score goals at the end of games. We don't give up goals due to lack of fitness or concentration, and I would feel very happy with what I did, and I deem this season from the sports science department successful.
It's been said many times that the MLS is one of the most physical and athletic leagues in the world, and that's kind of the first thing that comes to mind when people describe it. I'm wondering, how much do you think that reputation comes from the roots that many of the players and coaches in the league have with the NCAA athletic system?
That's a super question. Is it because the kids are coming from a college system? Perhaps it is. I don't know the best answer to that, other than I agree that the league is an athletic league. Fast, fit, athletic players all over the pitch. The American kids that are coming out of the college early on, they were multi-sport athletes, which leads to a really athletic person, somebody that not only played soccer but played basketball. Is typically pretty athletic. As the league has gone on, I've been involved since 1997. We're in our second decade of MLS. It appears that we're getting better athletes at the younger ages playing soccer. And there's an appeal to play football and basketball, and maybe get specific to one sport years ago. But now soccer is more popular. And we're getting, in the more kids that are athletic that are playing, the more athletic this league is going to get.
Another thing that's fairly unique about Major League Soccer is the amount of travel that the players have to do over the course of an MLS season and the distance between the various cities in the league. What do you believe are some of the keys with respect to dealing with the effects of cross-continent travel on the body of the players as the season progresses?
Man, you are spot on. It is a grind. And, having been with the Galaxy for 6 years, and we were taking, and that was back when we had a single table, so we were going to New England, Kansas City, D.C., we had these New York 5-6 hour flights where we'd have to go 2 days before. Not only is it the time spent in the plane, which is dehydrating, and you're not moving, but also the time zone changes. And it was really tough on the body. So I think the awareness is there. I know that when we travel, we land and we want to train, and we call it get the flight out of them, but get the guys' heart rates elevated, get rid of any venous pooling. We recommend that the guys wear skins, which are compression socks or compression pants, might cover their whole lower body to help with circulation, and really making sure that they hydrate. And that's on the plane, because it's a dehydrating place. The other part that I feel that teams perhaps could still be missing, especially when you have a long flight, is if you don't take care of the nutritional component, you have a 5-hour flight to L.A., and people aren't bringing meals on the plane, their own meals, and then landing and then getting fast food, that's an issue. One of the things we did first in Toronto is when we'd have a flight, we would travel, land, have some type of smoothie with protein powder in it, get changed, and then within an hour we're out knocking the ball around trying to get the flight out of us so the guys get their heart rate up, get the circulation going, they're more prepared for the next game. So for me, the short answer would be nutrition is essential, making sure they get enough meals from the traveling, hydration throughout the trip, the travel, and making sure that they're moving around when they land, get their heart rate elevated.
You've previously worked as a strength and conditioning coach with three MLS clubs, the LA Galaxy, Columbus Crew, and Chivas USA. The LA Galaxy in particular have been phenomenally successful while being managed by one of the greatest American head coaches of all time in Bruce Arena. I'm wondering, what did you take away from your time with the Galaxy with respect to coaching, player development, and organizational excellence?
When I was with the Galaxy, I had another top American college and professional coach. Ziggy Schmidt was the head coach from 1999 to 2003. I actually was hired by Octavio Zambrano in 1998, but I spent 5 years with Ziggy. And Ziggy had tremendous success in college, winning three national championships. He sent that tremendous success in the pros, winning a couple of MLS Cups with two different teams, besides U.S. Open, plenty of U.S. Open Cups, and the Champions League. wonderful experience to work under somebody that knows how to win, and he makes sure that the players understand this is professional sports, and winning was most important, and he demanded excellence every day. I thought the beauty of Ziggy is we would disagree and get in some heated debate in the meetings, but if you were strong and you, and for me it was always kind of a, what should the training intensity be? Hard or not hard, difficult or not difficult. When we left the room, if it made sense, we were all on the same page. Ziggy took the information and would change the practice if necessary, and we all moved forward together. I think Ziggy was always open, not that he always liked it, but he was always open for spirited debate. And I learned a lot about that. And the importance of knowing that every day, you got to get better every day. As an individual, and a team that needs to get better every day, even if it's the day before a game or it's a regeneration session, you can't throw away a day. And I think that Ziggy instilled that in everybody.
In addition to your work with Toronto FC, you're also the founder and president of your own company, Competitive Athlete Training Zone, and one of the leading experts in North America on creating and delivering exercise programs for children that inspire them to embrace the benefits of physical activity. For coaches that are working with children and younger athletes, how do you find the right balance between training for performance and promoting healthy physical activity, as well as just simply keeping things fun?
It's got to be fun. If you even the players, when we're playing, it's fun. I mean, they love it. I think the one piece of advice I would give to any coach is to let the players play, let the kids play. Create a community environment, create a safe, inclusive community. For me, it's when the kids come, greet them by name, don't allow nicknames. It's okay to be late because they don't have a driver's license. If they are late, tell them to jump into the practice. We are so thrilled that you're there. Never punish with exercise. You know, these are kind of staples of the things that I believe in, and always take the group in together. That moment that child arrives at your practice is probably the thing they've been looking forward to most that day, and to respect it and embrace it. The next part is then learning is important. Kids do like to learn. And so then the next part is your feedback is essential. You know, you may be a lot better player than I am. Well, let's not put you and I competing against each other in a juggling contest. I can juggle 3 times. You can juggle 33 times. Let's make sure I feel like I am getting better. I've juggled 4 or 5 times or whatever the drill is. And you are then improving yourself. So we try to get our mindset that I can get better. I want to get better. And then that way I'm learning, and the more I learn, the better I play. The better I play, the more fun I have. And coach is thrilled that I'm here today. It's important to the coach that I came today. So create that safe, inclusive community, and then the feedback needs to be positive, needs to be congruent to what they're working on, and it really making sure that you're not putting kids in positions to fail in front of the group when they're not ready.
Moving on from kids to mature professionals, many professional players are now endeavoring to continue playing at a high level into their mid and late 30s. I'm wondering, what are some of the developments in sports science that make that type of career extension more feasible?
I feel that we're talking about durability, and I think we're getting a lot more sensible with nutrition, rest, sleep, and the fact that we didn't know it was important, but there's a real understanding from the scientist to the player the importance of it, and it's that discipline to do that. The other part is there has to be some type of strength and conditioning, weight training, and flexibility and mobility. And those are things that in the past typically soccer players don't love to do. Players like to play. But to extend your career, you need to maintain levels of strength and flexibility, and you really need to take care of yourself off the field, nutrition, sleep, rest, hydration, and that information is there for the taking. And the players that are that responsible, especially if they're younger, if you start taking care of yourself as a 21, 22, 23-year-old in an optimal manner, you're more likely to continue your career. Let's say that stronger athletes get hurt less than weaker athletes.
All the players on Toronto FC are now in the midst of their off-season. How important is the right off-season training regimen with respect to preventing injuries when the next season finally kicks off?
Well, as I told them as they left, it's important to take a mental and an emotional break and really get away from the game. But it's also important to not stop moving. And that doesn't mean that you're out playing small-sided games or indoor soccer, but it's like a sports car. They are a sports car. Let's say you're a Ferrari, and in Toronto, if you've got a Ferrari, you're putting it in the garage now. And for the next 6 months, you may not take it out. Well, that Ferrari, you're not going to let it sit there for 6 months. You're going to start it and heat it up and maybe even drive it a little bit forward and back inside of the garage so the tires don't sit in the same place. It's the same thing. They need to unwind to get any strength deficits or flexibility, mobility issues taken care of, but they still need to move. And stopping completely leads to coming into a preseason where you're at risk of injury. You want to come into preseason with a moderate level of strength and fitness. Not optimal, you're not like you're ready to play the first game, but you're prepared for practicing a couple of times a day.
You'll be one of the featured clinicians at the National Soccer Coaching Conference that will be held in Toronto.
Yeah, I can't wait. I'm thrilled. Anthony Capitosto, heads up to you, man. Thank you.
What can attendees expect from your sessions?
I have two sessions. So one I want to do on physical domain. The other would be the social-emotional part of it. So the first one for me would be optimal athletic development for the maturing player. I really want to stress, even within your own team of under 14s, that there's a difference between chronological age and developmental age. Not all 14-year-olds are the same. Some may be completely finished puberty. Others may not even have started. Somebody might be 4'6". The other kid might be 5'6". So to understand that, then what can I? I want to give them real. What's the best way to say it? I want to give them actual exercises. From a conditioning, agility, mobility, power, speed, exercises that will help them as these kids are going through their growth spurt. So the risk is, as you grow, if you grow 3 inches in 2 months, that your risk of injury goes up. You're less coordinated, you're less flexible, and you could get injured much easier than you could 2 months prior. So I want to give them real to-do exercises to implement tomorrow, or whenever, not tomorrow, but February 2nd. That they can really bring it to their team. So they have an understanding of what it's like for a 12, 13, 14, 15, 16-year-old kid as they go through the growth spurt, how it feels, and what we can do to help solve that problem and help them get through. There's a mental part of it, too. You're not as good as you were. You're not as fast as you were as you go through these growth spurts sometimes. So I'll talk to that. The second one would be how to create a community environment and a culture of excellence. So I'll tap more into the social-emotional part. Management of the training session and feedback, your body language, etc. So we increase the opportunity for kids to learn. We really increase their or enhance their view of effort and discipline, that they'll actually love it. I call it gifts when I tell the kids I'm giving them gifts. So in the end, it's enjoyment. So when they leave practice or they leave a game, that they enjoyed the experience, win, lose, or draw. So the first one is physical, the second one would be social-emotional.
You have a previous history with Greg Vanney, and you've worked with him prior to your both joining Toronto FC. Greg comes across as someone who really buys into your scientific approach to fitness, player development, and injury prevention. Just in terms of coaching development, how important do you think it is that tactical head coaches and assistant coaches have a decent understanding of sports science and the correct approaches to player strength and conditioning?
I think, as you said it, we have an athletic league, and as the game gets faster and stronger and more powerful, it becomes more and more essential. And really, in its simplest term, where is this player with regard to training load at this moment in time, or were they injured? Are they coming back? Are they just doing the warm-up? Are they doing the warm-up in the technical training, warm-up technical? They're going to be a neutral. They're in full training. You have to have somewhat of a knowledge, so the conversation between the head coach and the strength and conditioning coach were on the same page. And then there needs to be a level of definitely have an understanding of work rate, intensity, volume, and what tools are best to measure those things. And then it's, you know, it's really up to the head coach and the strength and conditioning coach, or all the coaching staff, to be able to communicate it so there's an understanding when they go out to practice each day that everybody's on the same page.